Welcome to the 308th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with urban fantasy author Hunter Blaine, author of the Preternatural Chronicles. And also stay tuned for after the interview for a short excerpt from the audiobook of Book 3 of the Preternatural Chronicles, Shadow of a Doubt. That's right after the interview. Stay tuned for the interview now. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen to audiobooks during your commute, while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free Libro.fm app. If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from people who know audiobooks best, your local bookseller. Reading and Writing Podcast special offer, get two audiobooks for the price of one with your first month of membership with code RWPODCAST. That's code RWPODCAST for two audiobooks for the price of one for your first month of membership at Libro.fm. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Hunter Blaine. Blaine is the author of the urban fantasy series, The Preternatural Chronicles. His latest novel is Mouth of Madness. Hunter, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Sure. If someone listening hasn't heard about Mouth of Madness yet, how would you describe the novel?
Let's see. Well, the whole series, The Preternatural Chronicles, is a sequential series, kind of like most urban fantasies out there, like Dresden Files, Iron Druid, the Nate Temple series. So book one starts with I'm Glad You're Dead. And readers are calling it Deadpool is a Vampire, which is an excellent review, in my opinion, because just the snarky humor, the anti-hero vampire who's trying to use his powers for good and, wants to go to heaven whenever he takes the big sleep. So that was kind of a different take on immortals that I haven't seen before, which is, one day everything's going to end. So where will a vampire go whenever he dies?
And do you remember the original idea that led you to write the Preternatural Chronicles?
Yes, actually. This is a big one. So the series is starring my best friend. His name is John Cook. He'd always liked my writing. We grew up together, and he was a musician, and I was a writer. And we just kind of fed off each other, shaped each other into the people we are today. And he one day made me promise to write a book about him. I said, sure, what do you want to be? And he said he wanted to be a vampire, but not one of those sparkly ones. So I agreed. I made a promise to him. And then a couple of years after that, he pulled a party foul on me and died. So I had no choice but to kind of hold true to my promise to my best friend. And I wrote the first book, I'm Glad You're Dead, just for me. But then, I let my closest friends kind of get a hold of it, and they really liked it. And by the way, I'm Glad You're Dead is, I know it's an interesting title for a book dedicated to your dead best friend, but my series is full of movie quotes. So that's actually a quote from the 1989 Batman where Jack Nicholson is doing one of his monologues. So we used to quote that to each other all the time. So it was very appropriate.
That's great. Well, what are your earliest memories of reading in books?
Goosebumps, for sure. I remember devouring R.L. Stine's books whenever I was younger, and then advancing to Pierce Anthony with like the Incarnations of Immortality. That's still one of my favorite series today, just because of how good he is. And then, of course, Stephen King and all that. But really, I would say discovering Dresden Files by Jim Butcher. That's what really got me into the whole urban fantasy thing, and just thinking like, wow, this is amazing. So I've been just inhaling urban fantasy series out there, like the Dresden Files. Iron Druid Chronicles is really good, especially the narrations by Luke Daniels. Luke Daniels also reads my books, by the way, so he's doing the audio. So I have an Audible Hall of Famer reading my books, which is awesome. And then like Sandman Slim. And then I took, for my series, I took the things that I love from all these other characters and put them into one, such as Sandman Slim. The character's an anti-hero. He just leave him alone. He's going to kill the bad guys if they get in his way, that kind of thing. And then you have like the Dresden Files where you have the wizard who's trying his best to be good and all that. So, but with an ever deepening storyline. I really like the Dresden Files because the butterfly effect, something that happens in book three later on really comes down in book like nine, for example. So I incorporate a lot of the butterfly effect and foreshadowing in my series, which is awesome.
And in order to do that, are you planning the series books in advance, or do you just go back and pick up things that you can expand later? What's your process around that?
A little bit of both, but I have the whole series planned. It's 13 books total. 13 because that was John and my favorite number, mostly because, like, you know, Friday the 13th and all that stuff. But I have the series planned. I know exactly how it's going to end. and I can't wait to get to the end of book 12 and then to the end of book 13. Fans are going to freak out, that's for sure. But but also, as I like to listen to Luke Daniels do the books, because whenever you have someone, especially of that caliber, read to you, even me writing the books, it's like I get to hear them for the first time. So I'll catch certain things, you know, some minute detail that I'll think, I wonder what happens to that? And then I'll make sure to address it later on in the book. So it's really catching the small continuity things, or even just the small little Easter eggs, if you will.
So you mentioned earlier about writing the first book in the Preternatural Chronicles in kind of memory of your friend who passed away. What writing had you done before that?
Really just a lot of short stories, just nothing much, you know, sci-fi stuff, nothing published or anything. It was just, I enjoyed doing it and myself, just because it was a lot of fun to do. So actually, I'm Glad You're Dead is the first thing I ever really wrote in earnest and put out there. And I'm just really flattered that so many people are finding it enjoyable. You know, the reviews on Amazon, the reviews on Goodreads, the reviews on Audible. There's so many reviews on Audible. So I'm really humbled that everyone loves the first thing I ever wrote. Because I know for a lot of writers out there, you know, the first thing they ever do is kind of a little rough. Like even Jim Butcher himself, you know, I keep mentioning the Dresden Files because it's one of my biggest influences, but he's done several interviews where, you know, people ask, if you could get someone into the Dresden Files today, well, where would you tell them? He said, you just skip the first three books and that's where they start, because he doesn't like them, which I think they're pretty good, but I get where he's coming from, except that after I heard, you know, Luke Daniels do I'm Glad You're Dead, I thought, wow, this is actually a whole lot of fun. So I like it a lot.
And so what was the self-publishing process like for you for the Preternatural Chronicles? Did you try to get traditionally published, or did you go straight to self-publishing?
So self-publishing, my God. There is, my wife says I need to write a book on how to write a book after all this is done, just because there's so much more to it than I ever thought possible. I halfway tried to get published traditionally in the beginning, but really Amazon just made it too easy to self-publish. And but there are so many things you learn, such as, you know, you got to do the cover art. It has to be professionally done to compete with all the other ones out there, because I think there's like 2 million authors, indie authors on Amazon, if I recall. So there's just so much to it. I actually posted a video up on my Facebook the other day where my brain was just fried after dealing with ads and statistics and trying to do this and trying to do that. And, you know, planning the pre-orders coming out and the launch dates and all this other stuff. I really think being an indie author, writing is only about 25% of the equation. And I'm learning that more and more as I go.
And I know that Kindle and indie publishing changes constantly. Is there anything differently that you would do if you were publishing your first novel now than what you did when you first published it?
Yes. So I'm very much the type that I jump in the deep end with doing a cannonball to figure out if the water's cold or not. I know there's a lot of people out there, you know, who plan, and then they're stuck forever in the planning phase, but they never act. I'm the opposite. I just jump in and see what happens and figure it out as I go. the first book I ever published, the cover was, I'm pretty sure, knocking on the door of copyright infringement with a Batman pose. It had over 200 grammatical errors in it. Amazon lets you put up whatever you want. And I went through a whole slew of editors by using the service Fiverr. I really like to use Fiverr, but sometimes you get what you pay for. So editor after editor would come in and there would still be mistakes. And I finally did something I called the editor games, where I wrote a novella, about 12,000 words, I think, where I paid five different editors their full fees. And I told them, look, you're going to compete with four other editors and I'm going to choose the winner. And the winner's going to be with me for the rest of the series. So may the odds be ever in your favor. And then they went off. And then the one who caught my attention, her name is Fabiola. She's just been amazing. She catches the most minute of continuity things. Like I mentioned one of my favorite bands in the novella, just really briefly. But the novella takes place in 1990. And she came and pointed out, like, hey, they didn't form until 1991. And I thought, oh, my, that feels like something that I should probably know. So right then and there, I knew this is the one. And even today, like, I got book five back, What the Hell, yesterday. And I've been working on the re-edits and just the things that she catches, you know, I'm very fortunate to have her. So would I go back and do anything different? No. But at the same time, I sure have learned a lot.
That's great. So you mentioned outlining the entire series. So what is it like for you when you're sitting down to work on a new novel? Do you outline it extensively? Do you write more organically? What's that process like for you?
So I've done a lot of research, you know, Masterclass, where I learned from Neil Gaiman and some of those other really, really popular New York Times bestsellers and so forth. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. You know, some people like Brandon Sanderson will plan out a series, everything, chapter and outline. Jim Butcher does the same thing. He plans out every single chapter, scene, sequel. And he knows exactly what's going to happen in every single chapter. I tried doing that for book one. I planned out the entire thing. And then as soon as I started writing, John went off and did his own thing, which is very apropos, actually. So what I do now is I use a program called Scrivener, which Shane Silver's kind of got me turned on to, where I can actually plan out this is what has to happen. You know, I talked about this in this previous book. I foreshadowed this. So I put up a cork board of ideas. And this is what has to happen. But I don't plan out the story, except for I need to know where the climax is in the middle, and I need to know the resolution. And then I just start writing organically, and the story forms. And honestly, it works a lot better that way for me. Just the flow of it feels really good. The dialogue is natural, because I'm actually, as the writer, I'm watching these guys unfold, you know, before my very eyes. I don't know exactly what they're going to say. I just know, you know, my headspace whenever I'm talking, whenever I put in my mind into a particular character, they just start speaking and I get to see, like, as a fan, what they're doing. So it's actually really exciting to do it that way. It's almost embarrassing, but there's been more than a few times where I just burst out laughing after writing a section, just because of how funny the situation was and how much of a snarky ass John could be to some of the people.
And so do you have any writing rituals when you sit down to work?
No. I know some people, like Stephen King, says to write a minimum of 3,000 words a day. I don't have any rituals. Some days you feel it and some days you don't. I do try to write at least 5 days a week most of the time. I own a nutrition store called Empire Nutrition. It's located inside of a gym inside of Burleson, Texas. So I actually set up my laptop there, and in between customers coming up and so forth, that I usually am writing or working on ads or talking with fans, because I try my best to talk to every single fan that reaches out to me on Facebook or email or Messenger, whatever it is. I try to interact with every single one, because I remember talking to, like, Kevin Hearn or a really popular audiobook narrator, R.C. Bray, and, you know, just remembering how it felt whenever they responded to you. So I wanted to do the same thing. I try to respond to every single person. So my rituals are, I just sit down and see what happens. On days I don't really feel it, I try to at least get the story out. You know, I know this is what has to happen. And then I go back whenever I really feel it. And I can do, like, the analogies and metaphors and allegories and all that other stuff. Add in the fancy the fancy words, if you will. But, you know, on days that I feel it, I can get down, you know, 10,000 words. On days that I don't, it could be 10.
So we mentioned earlier about audiobooks. And I know when we were talking about indie publishing, that audiobooks are definitely up and coming and a growing area of indie publishing. Are you seeing that with your books?
Yes, I've sold a lot more audiobooks than regular books or ebooks even. But mine's kind of skewed though, because like I said, I do have Audible Hall of Famer Luke Daniels narrating. So he has his own fan base that will buy whatever he does simply because it's his voice and his performance, which is why I reached out to him.
And can you tell me how you got him involved in the project and narrating your books?
Oh yeah. So he read the Iron Druid Chronicles, which is one of my favorite urban fantasy series. And he just did a fantastic job with all the voices and his performance. And actually, R.C. Bray, he does a lot of sci-fi and military books. And I reached out to him because he's also one of my favorites. And him and I talked back and forth for a long time about him narrating the books for me. And then because he loved the story, you know, I made a promise to my best friend who died. And, you know, it really touched his heart. Really nice guy. And he wanted to do it. And so we talked back and forth for a couple months. I sent him the script. And then he made a deal with Podium Publishing, I think it was, where he was booked up for 2 years solid. And it's a legal contract with him and all that. And I said, you know what, man, I'm a business owner. I completely understand. You do what you got to do. I'm sure they paid you, you know, more than a pretty penny to be exclusive with them. Good on you. So he actually told me, like, hey, this is what you do. So, and I'm going to give you guys the same thing. So any writer out there listening, go to a platform called ACX, which is it's like a sister company of Audible or something like that. But mm-hmm. You can actually see all the different narrators on there. You can see their prices, for example. You could, if you want an indie person who's just coming up, you can put up a script and hold auditions. Or for me, I knew I wanted either R.C. Bray, Luke Daniels, Ray Porter, or McLeod Andrews. Like I had a list of favorites that I wanted to go to on this one. And I reached out to Luke and he did some research on me on Amazon, saw the reviews, read the story. And he's like, oh yeah, this is my thing for sure. Let's make this happen. So he gave me a price and I agreed to it. And actually, for those of you who are Luke Daniels fans, him and I split the royalties. So we actually make the same if someone buys an audiobook. And I wanted to do that specifically. I wanted to share the profits with him because I really believe, readers are agreeing with me on this, that he is giving it his all whenever he's reading, because it's not just another book. He's done over 600 books, right? This is not just another one. He's making money on it if he does a really good job. So I really feel like he's given it all, his all on his performance. As a matter of fact, I approved book 3, which is 15 hours long. And that's where the series is really starting to get crazy and take off. And there's consequences and all these really big things are happening. And at one point, I was listening to it with one of my best friends. And I said, man, I really think he was crying just then. And he nailed his performance. And I'm just so impressed with him and so happy to have him be a part of this journey with me. So for any writer out there, you just go to the ACX website. You know, you can reach out to the famous people, and if they have time, you know, they'll do it. You can host auditions. You can do all kinds of stuff. And anyone who out there who is a voiceover artist as well, you can go there and audition for people and make a name for yourself as well. ACX is just a great place, and it's very easy to use.
Great. Well, what writing advice would you offer for listeners who are writing their own stories and novels?
So I'm going to give everyone the same advice that every famous author I've ever spoken to has given me. Write. That's it. That's all you got to do. Now, for a lot of people, like I said, I'm the type that I figure out the temperature of the pool by cannonballing into the deep end, right? There's those out there who are the constant planners, right? They're going to be forever stuck in the planning phase. You have to get over that. You have to write, and you have to put it out there, and you have to see what happens and, you know, learn, adapt, and grow. But another thing, too, is I've published, 6 things So yeah, six things right now with the book number five in the series come out. So I have like two books are in the series, but one's in the Vela, so it doesn't really count. Another one's book 3.5, which is kind of an Easter egg. It's in the Preternatural Chronicles universe, but it's told from the point of view of the humans, where in the series where it is like Deadpool, where a vampire is ripping off some guy's head, or he's manifesting a blood weapon, which is another thing how I made it different is I got tired of the hiss, hiss, bite, bite that most vampires have done through since the beginning of writing. So I wanted him to be able to exsanguinate his victims in a different way. So he can manifest blood weapons, like whips, for example. He can make razors go down the form, the length of it. He can dagger or gladius. Then, stab the bad guy in the liver kind of thing. But what I was getting at is in the series, he'll kill all these different bad guys, like cultists or demons or whatever. And it's kind of like whenever Deadpool cuts someone in half, but he makes a funny comment about it. You're like, ha, that was funny. But in Moonlight Equilibrium, which is book 3.5, it's told from the point of view of the humans. So seeing one of your friends get his head bit off by a giant werewolf is not as funny. But to answer the question, though, right. And I'm just now, I have six things out, and it's now getting to the point where it looks like I'm going to be able to do this for a living without, without worrying. I've spent a lot of money on these things because I am indie. You are entirely 100% responsible, to get Luke Daniels. It was not, inexpensive. It was probably next to a house and a car. It was the most expensive thing I've ever done. And I'm glad I have an amazing wife who supported me and let me dip very heavily into the savings to hire an Audible Hall of Fame narrator. But at the same time, it's paying off. Like, the sales are coming in. He's given an amazing performance. The reviews are pouring in. There's over almost 300 reviews on the three books on Audible, and they're at almost 5 stars. So people are really digging it. But the best piece of advice is write. And I think it was even Jim Butcher that said it at book 6 was when he could do this for a living. So if anyone out there wants to do this for a living, you have to get as many books out there as possible, because if you pick up a reader, it's the same thing for musicians. They're not just going to buy the one album they like. They're going to go back and buy your whole catalog. So the more books that you put out, the more you're going to be able to do this for a living. But the secret to all this is just to write.
That's great advice. So what books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh, geez. Well, I do audiobooks personally because I suck at reading. It took me a year to read It, for example. Now, that is a big book, but, some people can read it in 2 days or something. And I don't know how you do it, but it takes me forever to read a book. So I really like audiobooks. And the narrator has to do it for me. So I've been listening to the Nate Temple series because he came out with books 1 through 3 and then 4 through, I think it was like 6. So I bought those. I've been listening to Craig Allinson. He does something called Expeditionary Force read by R.C. Bray, which is a sci-fi military kind of thing. But it's really funny. It's really funny. Very clever. Sandman Slim is one of those series that I love reading, because I dig the anti-hero kind of situation, and McLeod Andrews just does a killer job doing it. So those are the books I'm reading right now.
And where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your books?
Well, there's hunterblaine.com, and that's BLAIN. So hunterblaine.com. And then I also have a Facebook page. So Hunter Blaine author. If anyone buys the ebooks on Amazon, which you can also search Hunter Blaine, at the very end, I actually give hyperlinks that they can click on and go right to either the page, the Audible page, the Facebook page, BookBub, Goodreads, all author. I'm on as many of those platforms as possible. And then I'm also building my email list too, which you can sign up for, at BookFunnel, or I think on my Facebook, I have it set up, and on hunterblaine.com. So that's the best place to reach out to me.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Hunter Blaine, author of the Preternatural Chronicles. Blaine's novel, Mouth of Madness, is available now, so go buy a copy. And Hunter, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Great. Thanks a lot. And now stay tuned for a short excerpt from the audiobook version of Book 3 of the Preternatural Chronicles, Shadow of a Doubt.
Prologue. Water dripped incessantly every few seconds in the dark, freezing prison. There were no windows in Queen Mab's dungeon, so Oberon, the once king of all faerie, had no idea how much time had passed since his imprisonment. Had it been years? Decades? Only the water kept him company. Oberon refused to scream or lash out, knowing Mab would relish any show of emotion. Instead, he sat in meditation, dreaming of what he would do once he escaped. As he closed his eyes, his estranged wife flowed to the forefront of his thoughts, and he remembered. Oberon had danced with the idea of absorbing the Unseelie court for centuries. Though he had proclaimed himself King of Ulfari, he had known in the back of his mind that it was only in name. Everyone had been aware of Queen Mab and her unquestioned rule over half of Faerie. Therefore, the time had come to stop fantasizing over being the one true king. The time had come to attack and make it a reality. No one would dare question or doubt King Oberon, not even in private. Tatiana had argued with her husband over the necessity of the winter and autumn courts.
"We could rule them better than that bitch sitting on the throne,"
Oberon had roared in his blinding anger. Tatiana had simply stood with arms crossed and glaring at her husband. Taking a deep breath, Oberon had softened his tone and pleaded,
"Imagine it. Spring and summer in perpetuity. Flowers would always bloom, while full trees would wave in the warm wind. We can make it that way, wife."
"There can be no light without darkness, dear husband. We need the winter and autumn, just as they need the summer and spring. It is this perfect dance of balance and equality that gives way to life in Midworld."
"Who cares about Midworld?"
Oberon had bellowed, losing what small semblance of control he had had over his emotions.
"I want that throne, and there's nothing you can do to stop me."
As Oberon had turned to leave and prepare his private army, he had been surprised when his opinionated wife had said nothing. Now he knew why. She had betrayed him by warning Mab about his intentions of overthrowing the Unseelie court. Mab had been waiting, with Tatiana by her side. The loyal army of King Oberon had faltered and kneeled before the combined queens of Faerie, leaving the king alone to face the Unseelie. Oberon had refused to accept his fate and had battled everything that had been thrown at him. Frost giants wielding ice clubs, elves with blue eyes and skin casting dark magic, shrieking banshees, and even a cyclops had fallen to Oberon's blade and prowess. It wasn't until Tatiana had stood in front of him as he swung his sword that he had hesitated, allowing for Queen Mab herself to cast the powerful spell that had frozen the king in place. All of Faerie had known about his defeat and subsequent imprisonment.
"Bitch!"
Oberon barked through bared teeth. His face was sore from scowling for so long in the darkness.
"You're going to pay for this, dear wife. Both of you will."
Oberon could feel his fists shaking as wrath built a fire in his core that made his skin crawl.
"Maybe I can be of assistance,"
heard a smooth female voice from the darkness. Startled, Oberon's eyes shot open, only to be flooded with absolute blackness. Two amethysts appeared a few feet away from him, followed by a gleaming smile of sharp teeth. Oberon was perplexed at how teeth could shine in the complete absence of light.
"Who might you be, Spectre?"
Oberon asked in the tone of someone who was used to being the authority in the room.
"A humble servant of the one true king of Faerie," cooed the voice as the smile grew to a full Cheshire grin.